are now going to be talking about the debate that took place on Tuesday. I think it was January 14th, the Democratic candidates. And the mass media, they were really hoping for some blood to draw, you know, some red meat with this dispute that busted out when Elizabeth Warren said that in a private one-on-one conversation with Bernie Sanders, he said for 2020, he did not think that a woman could be elected. And of course, Bernie Sanders has denied that. Before we don't want to just talk about that in terms of the debate, because I'd be interested to hear what each of you thought about the debate itself. But let us go to a clip about the growing tensions between Warren and Sanders, and also what was said in that very awkward moment after the debate.
The race for the White House and the growing tension between Senator Elizabeth Warren and Senator Bernie Sanders. And you'll remember that moment at the end of the debate when Warren refused to shake Sanders' hand. So much lip reading afterward, but that's needed no longer because tonight the audio has been released. But who does this feud really help? Here's Lindsay Davis.
This was the moment millions watched. Elizabeth Warren refusing to shake Bernie Sanders' hand after the Democratic debate. And tonight we're finally hearing that tense exchange.
I think you called me a liar on national TV. I think you called me a liar on national TV.
Let's not do it right now. You want to have that discussion? We'll have that discussion. You called me. You told me. All right, let's not do it.
Overnight, CNN released that audio. While neither calls the other an outright liar on the debate stage, Sanders did deny telling Warren a woman could not win the election.
Well, as a matter of fact, I didn't say it. Hillary Clinton got 3 million votes, more votes than Trump. So who believes that a woman can't win? Of course a woman can win.
On Capitol Hill today for the impeachment trial, Warren wasn't taking questions about Sanders.
Senator, have you had a chance to speak?
Sanders was also pressed about the exchange with Warren.
Have you spoken to Senator Warren since the debate? Have you resolved anything there?
No, we haven't spoken.
Do you think it was a miscommunication?
A coalition of progressive groups is now calling for unity. There is concern that this rift could divide that wing of the party and give a boost to their more moderate rivals. They're hoping to move past the sparring of recent days and quickly, David.
All righty. And, you know, I'd really hope to be able to focus on some other things that happened in the debate. And Laura Carlson, I'd be interested to know from each of you what stood out, what jumped out at you. But however, this whole flap between Warren and Sanders has really taken off. I mean, in a new poll, a Reuters Ipsos national poll shows that Sanders has been climbing and is now tied with Biden among registered voters. That Reuters poll actually shows Sanders 20%, Biden 19%, and Warren 12%. I think this poll, I don't know if this poll was influenced, actually. I'll have to dig into that, and maybe our trusted assistant or producer there can look in to see if this happened after the debate. I think so. So it may have a reflection about how or how not that flap influenced the poll results. So, Laura Carlson, you weighing in on this particular flap, who do you think gains from it? And also anything else that jumped out at you from the debate?
I think that this flap, you know, between the two candidates was really set up by CNN in a way that did a great disservice to Democratic voters and to voters in general. This was a time when it was very important for the Democratic Party, despite the fact that there's six competing candidates, to set forth a strong vision of America, the United States, at a crossroads. That this should be what is at the center of the specific issues, that Trump and company are a threat to peace in the United States and abroad, that they betrayed democracy through violently constructed exclusions and fortified exclusions and discriminations, and that they're fomenting division within the communities. And then this comes up, and it really underlines how superficial the debate itself was, because it centered on, could a woman win? A woman as a stereotype, not a human being, and her ideas and what she's proposing to the voters.
Yeah.
You know, who can beat Trump? Who can bring the party together? And it really brings up a lot of issues that we've seen in other countries. In Mexico, for example, the government achieved parity, gender parity, in both the cabinet and the Congress, historically, for the first time. And the first lesson was that parity, whether a person is a woman or a man, is by no means even a guarantee of gender justice or advances.
Right.
It doesn't go to the structural changes that are necessary. It doesn't go to who can end violence against women, who can create a more inclusive society. Even the childcare discussion within the debate, you know, it was focused on the cost, and it didn't even go into the larger question of what's a care economy sustained by women within a capitalist society. So there were a number of issues that we got cheated on within this debate, and especially when it got sidetracked into this kind of personalist, you know, the fireworks between individuals that the press loves so much. The other thing that happened is that when the candidates of color dropped out, so did their issues, the ones that most affect them. And this, again, was in part because of the white male lens of corporate media and of CNN. But we didn't hear about voting rights and purging voting registry. We didn't hear about mass incarceration, police brutality, racism, and we didn't hear about immigration. There was virtually nothing on immigration. There were groups outside that were challenging Biden to stop the deportations because of his record under the Obama administration. There's a new caravan coming up to the border, and yet all of these kind of fell off the agenda as the debate went into this other territory. Even foreign policy, which took up a lot of the first part of the debate, there was nothing on Mexico. Mexico's a foreign country, and Trump has threatened to send in the army. He's threatened to build the wall and now got permission to do that, to take it out of the Pentagon budget. It's become a national security issue. And it's never even mentioned on trade as well. You know, there was a discussion about the new NAFTA, but those deeper issues of equality and of others, they only came up basically in the closing statements of Elizabeth Warren and of Bernie Sanders. So I don't think that this debate will give much clarity to the many undecided, especially in Iowa with the February 3rd caucus coming up very shortly. I think that it will just entrench the two camps that are already defined, and it will do very little in terms of pushing the undecided.
Yeah, and Jackie Goldberg, your thoughts on this? You have been an elected official, you know, as a woman and as a gay woman, right? And I, you know, it's true, the media definitely wanted this fight to happen and extending it. It also is true that it was Elizabeth Warren that came out with this story a year after it happened. And one has to wonder, you know, why. But given all of that and given what Laura just said, we also don't want the issues that were dealt with or weren't dealt with to be overlooked by this particular flap. But it's worrying enough that progressive groups have now issued some kind of statement. I haven't read it yet, but I understand it basically is kind of like a call for a truce, saying it's not helping the progressive movement. Jackie Goldberg.
Well, I agree with everything that Laura said. You know, this is a manufactured difficulty. I don't understand what happened, why Elizabeth even brought it up, but I do know that when you are in a statistical tie, which the four top Democrats are in right now in Iowa, it's a statistical tie. Even though there's a difference in the numbers, the plus or minuses that come with statistics of polls means that they are actually all basically capable of winning the primary. So what that means is that your folks that run your campaign begin to look for ways for you to distinguish yourself from other candidates. And this has always been an issue that was going to come up somehow between Warren and Sanders, since their politics are very similar, except for the fact that, of course, Warren says that you need to reform the market economy, and Bernie says that democratic socialism is the ultimate answer. That's a big difference, but to most voters, it's not a big difference. They see their policy issues as very similar. So what happens then is that probably somebody in Elizabeth's campaign said, well, why don't you just throw a little something at Bernie, not something serious, but just say, well, you know, once upon a time he actually said that he didn't think that a woman could win to me, and that was probably not a good thing for him to have said. And so she throws that out, and he either doesn't remember it or doesn't remember that that's what he said. He said something different, but that's not what he said, which is very possible, by the way, on a conversation that's a year old. And in either case, what happens is the media then says, let's poke the both in an eye with this and keep going. And I think that that's very unfortunate, but it's not unusual. This is a very difficult race when you don't have a real front runner. And Biden was at the beginning a real front runner. He is no longer that. He is now one of four seriously in consideration, at least in Iowa and probably in New Hampshire as well. And the result of that is that campaigns try to find ways to distinguish candidates one from the other. I think this is a stupid situation. I hope both of them will stop talking about this at all, because the fact of the matter is, let's say worst case scenario, that Sanders said was exactly what she said. He said in public that if that was the case, that's certainly not what I meant, because God damn it, Hillary run 3 more million votes than he did. Of course a woman can win. That should have been the end of it. That should have been the end of it. But now each of them is saying, you called me a liar. That's ridiculous. No, you didn't. You disagreed as to what you remember happened. That is not necessarily calling someone a liar. And when you begin to have that pressure on you, though, as the ending days toward the end of a campaign for in a primary come to, is very complex for a candidate, particularly ones who are now in a really struggle to see how this is going to move forward.
Yeah, and Dr. Gerald Horn, I mean, a lot of people are saying, and I think there's a good case for it, is that they had to know that some kind of mic would pick up what was being said. And the optics of it, of Bernie putting out his hand and Warren, clearly she was furious. Bernie wasn't too happy, and Steyer is looking a little stunned by the whole thing. But Dr. Gerald Horn, I mean, there's that going on with this presidential race and debate. But the Washington Post now has come out with a major article about a Washington Post Ipsos poll of African Americans nationwide. And basically, they are strongly anti-Trump and are saying that their main focus is to get rid of Trump. And a lot of people are saying that explains why Biden has is leading in the black vote of people 35 and above, because 35 young people among black people, Sanders is leading. So it really remains to be seen. But clearly, the black vote and black women's vote in particular is going to play an important role in it, as will the Latina vote. So the fact that they didn't even bother to mention immigration, despite all of what's going on, the separation of children and all of that, the wall, is really quite shocking. And I think Laura makes a point that Jackie agreed to on this. But Dr. Horn, your thoughts on all that?
I think that same poll also suggests that black voters, by a rate of 8 out of 10, feel that the current occupant of the White House is a racist. I'm detecting a certain amount of ferment and flux in the Afro-American community that is quite striking. I mean, I would point you to the 1619 Project of the New York Times, which seeks to connect the ills of today with the slavery of the past. And in many ways, these mostly black journalists who put out the 1619 Project are to the left of the U.S. left in terms of their critique of the creation myth of the founding United States in 1776. It's quite an extraordinary intellectual and political development that we're going to have to keep track of. Likewise, because of pressure from the black community, you saw that the billionaire Michael Bloomberg, who was not on stage but is shaping the race nonetheless, was forced to retreat from his stop-and-frisk policies, which targeted disproportionately black and brown youth while he was mayor of New York City. And likewise, he's been forced to defend his non-disclosure agreements with regard to women who sued him or his corporation back in a time when he was acting like some sort of gender cowboy, running roughshod over the rights and interests of his women employees. The Wall Street Journal reports this morning that even though Mr. Bloomberg was not on stage, that he's shaping the race by driving up television advertising costs and also by paying a pretty penny to staffers, which means that Warren and Sanders and all the rest have to match those kinds of rates that Bloomberg is paying, which means that he's really shaping the race, whether we like it or not. Now, concerning this Warren-Sanders swap, I agree with David Sirota, a Sanders surrogate, who suggests that we really should be talking about Biden and his decades-long efforts to cut back on Social Security, or we really should be talking about Mayor Pete and his scandalous lack of experience and his unfortunate tenure with McKinsey, the consulting giant, where he was involved in cutting jobs. And we really should be talking about why it is that Cory Booker and Kamala Harris had to drop out of this race and why there were no candidates of color on the stage, despite the fact that the Democrats are heavily dependent, as the South Carolina primary will exemplify, on black voters in particular. But alas, unsurprisingly, none of those critical issues have reached the surface thus far.